sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, March 9th, 2011, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. My friend and colleague, Carol Queen, sexologist, writer, educator, and activist, is back with us today. This is part two of her appearance for both the Sex Wisdom and the Play With It series. There's way more interesting chat coming your way as soon as I finish these announcements. But wait, you didn't miss part one of this delectable conversation, which appeared here last week at this time, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you gotta do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 266, and presto! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. Carol invites you to visit her on her site, carolqueen.com. Check out her monthly column in Good Vibrations Online magazine that you can find by visiting goodvibes.com. And look for her on Facebook and on Twitter, too. Today's podcast is brought to you by our friends at adultsextoys.com. Our sponsor carries a hot load of quality name brands like Fleshlight, Lilo, Tantus, and Fun Factory. But here's the amazing thing about AdultSexToys.com. They make a promise that they will not be undersold. That's right, they guarantee the lowest price on the net. And who has money to burn in trying times like these? Isn't this precisely the kind of competitive edge you look for in an online retailer? I know I do. But that's not all. At AdultSexToys.com, you don't pay sales tax. That's right. They pay the freaking taxes for you. Still not convinced AdultSexToys.com is the place to shop? How about if I tell you that they are currently offering a free shipping promotion and free gifts just for asking? I'm telling you, people, you can't beat these deals with a stick. Look for their handsome AdultSexToys.com banner in the sidebar of my site, DrDickSexAdvice.com, and pay them a visit. You'll soon be convinced, as I am, that they are some kind of wonderful. Okay, on with the show. Carol Queen, thank you so much for granting us even more time after that exceptionally long time we had together last week. I am so delighted that you're back because we're getting into some wonderful stuff about sex toys, and I want to pick up exactly where we left off. We were talking about health concerns last week, and I want to move on just slightly to an issue that is of concern for lots of people, and that is, can sex toys enhance couple play? And if I had to guess, I would say that most people use sex toys in their private play, but more and more products are being produced that are designed to enhance couple play. Do you find that couples are now shopping together for their toys, or is there still a lot of resistance to bringing toys to partnered play?
Well, I would say that there is still a bit of a, among some, a sex toy jealousy, defensiveness, what have you. That isn't altogether gone away. But I also think that it is less of a big issue among the generation that's coming up now. The generation that is more likely to have seen toys referred to in their, you know, pop culture consumables, their movies, and, right. and things like that. And young people now have access to something that we didn't when we were in college and doing our sexual orientation organizing, which is some of them have sexual health or even sex positive clubs on their campuses, right. which is fabulous, and you know, gives us the opportunity to go and talk to college students from time to time, which is always so great. And I think that there's an argument to be made that it is more older generation folks who have more of an issue, although this sort of sex toy nervousness can, of course, cut across generational and other demographic lines too. It's sort of a common wisdom that more men are worried about this with toys and their female partners. But I've certainly known same-sex couples who, you know, either fought over the toys or if they were going to break up, fought over who got custody of the toys sometimes.
So true. Oh,
so
my God.
True. I can't divorce her. I wouldn't be able to live without that dildo. Oh, my God. Which is, it's not a reason to stay with someone, but if it's reason to get yourself into couples counseling, well, then good. Good on you. It just because things have... Just because you really want to take the dildo and use it separately from one another now doesn't mean that you can't get back together and get back in the groove, get back in the saddle. So exactly. The thing I want to say about this is that really when I hear that people have an issue, the issue, it seems to me, still has to do with a kind of sexual stereotype often and a misunderstanding or misapprehension about sex and sexual functioning, which is that... somebody's partner is supposed to be the one to give them pleasure and orgasms. It's not something they do together. It's, you know, someday my prince will come and so will I, a phrase I'm sure you've heard other sexologists use, which I like very much. Prince or princess, depending on where you stand with that. And that there's something about the responsibility that, particularly in heterosexual couples, the culture is still giving males, and many males are taking on and allowing to be part of their understanding of what it means to be masculine and a man. Yes. That, frankly, you could throw that baby out with the bathwater and nobody would ever miss it. That baby doesn't need to grow up. What that baby needs to do is to speak up and say, you two are each living in a body. You're responsible for your body. Why don't you dance together? Right. You know, you two need to both be in the mix with figuring out how to bring optimal pleasure to each other. Right. And the people who are already in that zone think sex toys are fabulous. And they think they're fabulous partly because both partners often have figured out that they enjoy playing with them. It isn't just a marital aid to help a woman have an orgasm. Right. It's a sex toy to give people different sensations to play with and to enjoy.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm fond of saying if sex is too much like work, then you're not doing it right. You know, it should be playful. And that's why we call them toys. But, you know, I do know lots of people who get very defensive about it and, you know, very threatened, you know, that, oh, my God, my dick, you know, is not that big and it's not that rippled and it doesn't vibrate and, you know, it doesn't have a little clit attachment and, you know, and so how am I going to compete? Well, you know, is it all about competition? I don't think so.
Well, and I think that there's this notion that winning this competition. What does this even look like? If a partner is interested in experiencing some sensations that she or he has heard about or has already experienced and knows that she or he likes, how do you exactly become a more valuable partner to that person by saying, no, that's not what you should be doing?
Right, exactly.
That's ridiculous. It's not being present with that person's desire. I don't know anyone who successfully becomes the lover that these folks must dream of being by being restrictive in that fashion. It's quite the contrary. Those lovers say, you got a toy? Bring it to bed. Let me watch you use it.
Exactly.
Show me how you hold it. They become playful and in tune with their partner's desire rather than imposing what they think sex must look like on that other person. There's just a fundamental incompatibility problem here. And it's not that these two people aren't matched up properly. It's right. That the one person's idea about what sex should be is incompatible with reality. I mean, I don't mean to be so harsh when I say that, but I've never met But I've never met a person who successfully pulled off this, I'm jealous of the vibrator, therefore you must not use it, now we're happy, honey, aren't we? It just doesn't work that way.
I'll say. So I'd like to move on to talking about porn. It's still such a stumbling block for so many. However, like the toy end of the industry, conscientious consumers, as well as sex-positive producers, are reshaping porn. Would you not agree?
I would absolutely agree, and I would say that while there is still a lot of the same old being put out, it's worth saying that many people like the same old and value it and are always happy to see some more of it, and ever more often there are people popping up around the margins of the industry who say, you know, I'd like to do something very different than this, and you know, there has been different kind of porn. Ever since there's been porn, there's just not an awful lot of it. And more importantly, unless you really know what you want and know how to go and out and look for it, it hasn't always been immediately accessible in your neighborhood porn store. So the internet has sort of opened doors for people this way. Of course, it's also opened the door that you can spend all day watching porn, forgetting to go grocery shopping and do your job at work. So there are some challenges, of course, to deal with about the increased availability of porn. But people being able to actually look around and find the stuff that really enhances their own sexual identity and their eroticism, that has gotten easier and I would argue is a better situation now with the advent of the internet.
Right. I'm always careful to tell people, particularly the men folk, that they ought not get their sex ed from porn. However, sexually explicit video material can tell us something about sexual patterning, right? And then
Absolutely.
There's also the enrichment factor, too.
Well, I think it's always nice when people can get access to the kind of porn that is made by people who aren't being told by a director in the corner that they have to do things a certain way so that they get to do it the way they want to do it, which means they generally have more fun doing it. They put out more genuine desire and sexual pleasure, which is a plus for anybody watching the stuff. Yeah. It helps the viewer understand the differences in the way people do things and enjoy things, which makes it one click closer to halfway decent or good sex education than the stuff that, I always like to cite this as my favorite example of why porn makes bad sex education. Generations of men, heterosexual men, have now been encouraged to believe that if they withdraw and ejaculate on the small of a woman's back, that it will send her into paroxysms of thrill.
And how did we learn that, do you suppose?
Guys, I have news for you. I hate to break it to you, but I feel that I must. It's my responsibility. Pretty much no. That's pretty much not what gets women off. A couple of women out there really probably are fetishized to that like nobody's business, but all the rest of them, knock yourselves out. You're not going to get her off that way.
But you'll be awfully proud of yourself, though, won't you?
Well, you know, and for the person who is doing that particular activity, I am not going to deny, and I value this fact, that there is a visual thrill to be had seeing yourself and your load right there on the small of a pretty back.
Yeah.
Great! That's awesome! But just don't think that that's the way it is supposed to be done in everybody's bedroom, no matter what. That wouldn't be true. And you know, really, I think that our granddads and, you know, some of your listeners' great and great-granddads had access to blue movies back in the first half of the 20th century and little 8-pager, sometimes called Tijuana Bible, cartoon porno books that they consumed with as much relish as anybody consumes explicit material now, but also with that same desire to figure out how it works, what sex is, and how the mechanics are, and what the variations are. And that's why I really love to see alt porn, amateur with real enthusiastic people, not just aping what they see in porn, but doing what they do. And and queer porn that gives us more of a view into what those real people would be doing even if there weren't a camera on them, because that's when you start to understand not just how to do it. You figure out how to do it based on your own desires and the desires of the people that you have sex with, but the variations of ways that it can be done.
And
that's when you start to open doors. Jillions, millions, trillions. I mean, how many people are there in the world? Maybe there are that many separate ways to have sex. So don't limit yourself to that one or two kinds of ways that you see in most porn.
So you are a performer yourself, or have been, right? You mentioned this
last week
with
that
Bendo
is right.
Boyfriend. Are you still at it, so to speak?
Well, I can't say that I've entirely retired, because I can't say that I wouldn't do it again.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't done any actual live action on camera activity for a few years, for a variety of reasons that include the health issues of my partner and some other things. But I am still on screen on a regular basis now with the Pleasure Ed series that I'm helping Good Vibes sister company Good Releasing is making. Queer porn, alt, more or less hetero porn. Of course, hetero porn includes women doing women as a practically as an adjunct flavor of heterosexuality, which I realize irritates some lesbians to no end, but others think it's hot, so never mind.
Right.
And also this explicit educational line, Pleasure Ed. I call explicit educational porn ex-ed.
Cool.
Because it is different from just a talking head saying, blah, 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 this is how you do it. You get your talking head, and then you get your people saying, we're doing it, watch. And it's a better way, to me, it's a better way to sort of illustrate the thoughts and the information that the informative person, that would be me in this case, puts out there. You know, and I sit at a desk and talk all about the G-spot, and then you get to see some frisky women showing you how their G-spot works, and it's a win-win as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
But I'm still very, very actively doing those, scripting and hosting those, and you never say never if I get the opportunity to take my pants off for a movie again, and it's the right right context, I'm sure.
You go.
It'll be, you know, be granny porn eventually, but... I'm not a granny, so it wouldn't, in fact, be. I have cats, not kids, so we'd have to call it something else.
So when I was doing Daddy-O Productions, and people would write to me and said, are you in any of the movies? And I said, no. I said, I'm going to save that until when we start doing our geriatric series.
Some of us really need to be the people who represent when it's time to do the full line of baby boomer,
right? It's so
baby
true.
Baby boomer porn.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is going to take.
And there's this. I don't know how it's happening in heterosexual porn, but in gay porn, there's this effervescence of older men, hot older men, who are now big stars in the industry and are working a great deal, bringing the whole idea of human sexuality, continues into, every age of human existence.
And it's so important, because even if you're not learning sex techniques and information from porn, there's a way in which this kind of material is almost a mentoring material, almost the kind of stuff that encourages people to know that they don't need to give up their own sexual desires and sexual activity.
Right.
And I think it's extremely important. There is more age range, I think, in heterosexual porn than perhaps there used to be, but much of it continues to be sort of specialist material, fetishized in particular ways, that not everyone is as comfortable with as everyone else. But I also know that we're getting to a period in history when the porn performers of the 70s and 80s are now entering that period of their lives, and some of them, like the the late Juliet Anderson, Aunt Peg, who died just a year ago, have put their money where their mouth is and taken their pants off for the team, and is attempting to take elder explicit movies out of that granny gangbang kind of fetishy context, which again is sexually related material that some people really like and value and love watching, and good for them. But if there were a way to not put people in a niche and allow them their full free sexual expression, I think that would be a more positive thing.
And it's that fetishy stuff or niche market kind of stuff tends to be really exploitative, and it doesn't really show human sexual behaviors other than it's more of it is there to make fun of or shame almost.
It can be disrespectful.
Yes.
And that's not the message that I ideally would like my erotic movies to send. It's fundamentally kind of sex negative.
Exactly.
In my view, and I would like part of what the adult industry does in general to bring sex positive images. I mean, it sounds a little weird to say this. I mean, like, isn't explicit cinema by itself, by definition, sex positive? Mm-hmm. I don't always think that it is.
No.
And I don't want to come down harshly on an industry that has plenty of people coming down harshly on it every day already, including some people that I really don't get along with very well. But I will say that I think when porn performers do have really sex positive and positive working conditions, and the message that they're being encouraged to send is one of sex positivity, that they have more fun doing their movies, and I think it's it means more potentially to the people who view them. And I just really want to encourage anybody who has the energy to make that kind of material to do it, to not aim low, to aim a little higher. It's not that hard to do these days with more people who have decided to make porn having a sex positive grounding in the way that they think of what they're doing. What makes this stuff honest is really if the performers themselves can do what they like to do. And there isn't, as I said, a director in the corner telling them, oh, don't do that, if they want to do it. You know, my partner Robert and I once made a movie. It was a sex ed movie, in fact, for an unnamed company, where the director, once we got into it, believe it or not, finally we got in the mode, the cameras were no longer there, foremost in our minds, and because I'm more of an exhibitionist than he is, so he had to sort of get into the space. As soon as we got into it, the director said, cut, we've got what we need.
Oh,
like, did you not notice that the sex actually just got good?
Because it's not about that for a lot of industry people. It isn't about that at all. That's the crying shame of it. My goodness.
Right, we've got enough of that. Let's break for lunch and go do another scene now, instead of let's follow this thread of sexual energy to see if we can get a really good, worthwhile scene out of it. And sometimes the exigencies of making porn do give them good, worthwhile scenes, even if the room's too cold and people are hungry. But the rest of the time, it can be a workmanlike thing. I mean, I think many people sort of fantasize about how hot it must be to make porn, and the fact is it's hard work. It can be very difficult to convey and do what you're supposed to be doing athletically. Haven't you noticed most people making porn get in positions that many of us never attempt to know? This, lady sticking her legs straight up in the air business, generally not what the ladies in the cul-de-sac in the suburbs are doing every Sunday morning.
Right.
Just not.
Right.
And I think that makes a real difference to the viewer's appreciation, but the viewer doesn't always know that. I mean, there's a media literacy angle to all of this, too, and then, Americans are not schooled in media literacy in general. They don't necessarily know what their evening news is bringing them with political attitudes or social mores. It's
exactly.
Certainly not porn. So
yeah, right,
it would be nice if all of our schools and universities had classes in this, but I guess I'm that won't happen anytime right away, I don't think.
So you said something a bit ago that I would like to pick up on, and you said that there's a lot of people in the culture that don't appreciate what sexually explicit material can be, and you alluded to the fact that even amongst our professional peers, there are lots and lots of people who, you know, denigrate and shame those who work in the porn end of the industry. I felt that myself when I was doing Daddy O Productions, and they said, you know, how could a sexologist, a PhD, you know, do such a terrible thing?
You know, I do think that there are some people in the sex therapy and clinical sexology world who didn't pay sufficient attention to the part of their training that allowed them to think about using explicit materials in creative ways.
Right.
And of course, one of the things that should be said is that not everybody who's a sex therapist had that kind of training.
Right.
We were really extremely fortunate,
yes,
in the sex positive and erotologically inclusive nature, I'm going to use my science words for this, of the training that we got at the Sex Institute, but plenty of sex therapists in particular weren't trained be sex therapists. They were trained as therapists. They were interested in sex and realized that there was some work to be done and some money to be made there, and went ahead and gravitated in that direction and do not have a complete and comprehensive understanding of human sexual variation and a sex-positive perspective.
Right. Right.
And so when someone needs to see a sex therapist or a clinical sexologist, remember doing a little checking in about the attitudes and background and training of that person is not inappropriate.
That's true.
And you may find somebody that is better to work with than the next guy or woman, specifically because of that set of issues. I have talked to many people, especially with sort of variant sexualities, BDSM people, sex workers, who have gone to see a therapist and have gotten put down, frankly, put down.
Absolutely.
In the kind of way that you would expect them to get put down when they went home for Thanksgiving. And
so
it's so inappropriate. I don't want to too badly harsh people who didn't have the benefit of a truly inclusive training, but can't they see that there are certain folks that they should not be working with,
yes,
if they have
and
buttons to
out.
Be pushed? Yeah, it would make such a difference if every helping professional of this kind knew what her and his boundaries were. Doctors too, you know,
yes,
every kind of professional,
true,
who comes across sex and sexual variety, if they've got an issue, then they have just made themselves the inner professional for that particular person, unless they're willing to turn that around and get the right information.
Right. There's one other slightly tangential thing that I want to talk about in terms of the conversation that we're having, and that is about sex addiction. This is a big bugaboo for me. I'm just almost in a rage about it. There has this industry has built up, and a lot of it has to do, again, our professional peers who have involve themselves in this almost to the exclusion of anything else. Would you like to address the issue?
Oh, I would love to address it.
Great.
And I
Thanks.
Don't think it's tangential at all. I think it actually is a kind of perfect Venn diagram between the discussion we were having about porn and the background of some sex therapists, because they'll get training in sex addiction theory and practice without ever having an underlying training in sex and sexual variation. And so it's very easy for people who don't understand the range of sexual expression to get triggered by one or another part of the spectrum and understand those as being gateways to or indicative of sex addiction. Porn is very much been colonized by sex addiction folks recently. It used to be that too much masturbation Which, of course, goes along with porn use. So much porn use, much masturbation, often, I was going to say, go hand in hand. Maybe there's even a better way of putting that.
No pun intended.
And no, none whatsoever. It's just another one of my Freudian slips. I've got more slips than Mr. Freud than wear under his dresses. I think that there's so much to say about a field that would take making sex in various ways problematic,
right,
that then doesn't do a good and thorough job at helping people turn that around and determine what would be non-problematic sex for them. Now, I'm the first one to say that people can get into sexual ruts, into sexual obsessions,
right,
into kinds of sexual practice that divide them from intimacy with partners rather than encouraging it.
Yes.
But there are many biases attached to this notion of sex addiction, and quite frankly, one of those biases is that everybody should have an intimate relationship with another person.
Right.
Just one, mind you.
Yes.
And many sex addictionologists would be worried if it were a gay relationship.
Yes.
So there are really wellsprings of sex negativity in this field that if it's not fully addressed, the practitioner runs the risk of doing harm even while he or she desires to be doing good for somebody. I mean, I'm sure these folks all believe that sex addiction is real. I hope they believe it's real, because if they don't believe it and they're taking people's money to treat it, I would think that that's a little cynical. But understanding that not everybody is like everybody else needs also to extend to the degree of how many times you go for an orgasm every day or every week, how you do it, whether or not there's another person in the room with you when you do it, whether or not it's appropriate for you in your context of life to have more than one partner, and then you can turn the page and say, do some of these people need to get right and be honest with partners that they have?
Yes.
Now, sometimes that's the real underlying question, not whether they're addicted to sex. It's, do they want to be honest about the fact that they have multiple partners with their spouse? No.
Right.
That's not the same as an addiction. It's the same as being dishonest and not fully transparent with your spouse.
Right. So
maybe
true.
There's an addiction under there after you deal with that problem, but I bet the real problem is the, I would really rather that my spouse not read my text because
right.
it's none of their business.
Right. Right,
well,
right.
maybe you could make an argument that it is.
Absolutely. So our time is up again for this week. It is. I could go on and on because you are so charming and so delightful to talk to. But I do have two questions before we conclude. And interestingly enough, there are the same two questions that I asked just about everyone that I alluded to at the beginning of last week's show. And that is, who are your inspirations? And if you have sexual heroes, who are your heroes?
Well, you know, I think my inspirations are all those people who have to struggle, as that statement on my website alludes, have to struggle to get to sexual happiness and integrity. And they're not all people whose names we would know or recognize.
Right.
They're probably not all people who would want to be recognized for this particular thing, but plenty of people in our culture really need to battle a history of sex negativity or sometimes
right.
abuse or so many things,
right,
so many
right,
things.
Right.
Homophobia, piss poor sex education that doesn't give them any level of understanding about their options or just hints at them and then denigrates most of them.
Right.
I mean, there's a rock wall to scale here that many people manage to get to the top of and really become fulfilled, happy sexual humans, and those people are my inspiration. It means that what I do to some of those folks means something, and that gets me up every morning no matter what. And as far as heroes are concerned, I have to say my number one sexual hero is probably Betty Dodson.
Yes.
Betty Ann, who is my dear friend, but who many people know as the mother of masturbation. I'm not sure if masturbation existed before, but well, sure it did. But she's done more to help people feel good about it and get good at it than pretty much anyone in the last 30, 40 years, and I admire her so much. And a person who brings an extremely incisive as well as compassionate brain to everything he does having to do with sexuality is Patrick Califia. Patrick was my heroine before he was my hero, if that makes sense to people who are listening.
Yes, and, that's so true.
Even back when Patrick was Pat Califia and was the author of Macho Sluts and some of a particularly early book of essays, some of Pat's work in the essay format was probably the most important sort of precursor find for me to think I could write to. I think if I had to pick one person who gave me the most inspiration as far as my writing career goes, Patrick is that person.
With that, we must conclude. I want to thank you again for your precious time. We are the richer for the experience. We wish you all the best in your work, and we hope to see you at least on in cyberspace, if not in person, in San Francisco.
Well, it has been such an enjoyable and fabulous discussion. I'll come back anytime you'd like, and thank you and all of your listeners so much for the time and the great, great, great conversation.
Thanks, darling. Be well.
You betcha. You too.
Bye. What a terrific show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next time for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is AdultSexToys.com. Shopping for sex toys is very personal, and not everyone's taste is the same. That's why AdultSexToys.com carries over 8,000 different adult products, and new items are being added all the time. Not sure what to buy? Check out their best sellers page, their recommendations section, which can be found at the top of many of their sex toy categories, or simply use their advanced search function to help you find the ideal sex toy for you or a partner. AdultSexToys.com believes that the world of adult products is best explored in a safe, private, and secure setting, your own home. What better way to find precisely what you're looking for? And hey, they offer discreet shipping and billing too. Don't miss their hot sale items where you can score the most popular toys for up to half off. And remember, you never pay sales tax at AdultSexToys.com. Look for their handsome banner in the sidebar of my site and pay them a visit. Tell them Dr. Dick sent you. Until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.